Hello, everyone, and welcome to minute 74 of Movie Rob Minute, the daily podcast, where we take a wild trip through the 1987 John Hughes comedy Planes, Trains, and Automobiles, 1 minute at a time. I'm Rob, and joining me once again on this lovely Thursday is Austin Pryor of Malkovich Minute.
As long as you get a Malkovich and a minute in there, you'll be doing fine.
Yeah, but you got to get in there twice, you know.
Yeah.
So, minute 74 begins with Del continuing his prediction and ends with Neil changing the subject. So yesterday, we had a very great bonding episode with Neil and Del sitting in the motel room drinking little bottles of booze that Del apparently brought with him, and eating bags of Doritos or chips or things like that. Del ended yesterday's minute by starting to say, you know, when I'm dead and buried, and he continues today, all I'm going to have around here to prove that I was here was some shower curtain rings that didn't fall down. The response is, great legacy, huh? Mm-hmm. At the very least, at the absolute minimum, you've got a woman you love to grow old with, right? So, first of all, I like the way that this little conversation, they're starting to, like, ponder life. And you could also feel that they're both a little tipsy. So yeah. They've reached the point where, you know, they have less inhibitions, and the two of them are bonding together. So they're talking about these different things. So it's a very deep moment in a very light atmosphere. Mm. So and it really works from my perspective, at least. You know, and what's funny is, you know, Neil is the one who says, at the very least, at the absolute minimum, you've got a woman you love to grow old with, right? So we mentioned earlier in the week about the fact that in the original script and in the shooting script, I mean, when they shot it, Neil was in this rift with Susan. So, you know, for him to make a statement like that seems very out of place. Knowing that, having that information, not having that information and seeing, you know, or believing that this is a caring, loving relationship between the two of them helps make it seem as if, you know, it works.
Yeah, but I could imagine it would be quite touching, even if it was, if they were having this difficulty and he's, you know, getting drunk and you know, a bit waxing philosophical about life and everything. And he's just like, he just knows in his heart of heart that once he gets home, he's going to make it right and that he loves her and everything. So I could kind of see that it could be read, even if they are having these difficulties on the alternate version,
right,
of quite a sweet moment that he's like, he's still going, you know, to the wives, you know?
Right. That's true. All right, and you can see little by little that Del feels a little bit hurt by these statements because, you know, again, we know the, you know, where Marie is. Neil doesn't, but, you know, every single thing that Neil says, he's not saying it obviously to be mean.
Yeah.
You know, he thinks that he's talking with someone who is going through something similar as he is. So by saying, you love her, don't you? And Del's response is, love is not a big enough word. He goes, it's not a big enough word for how I feel about my wife. And then the, you know, which again, has a completely different meaning if you know what's going on here.
Yeah, yeah. So, yeah,
which, and once John again, Candy is a testament to, it's a testament, first of all, to the great writing of John Hughes.
Yeah. Yeah, because if you think about this movie from a writing point of view, there, it's just a bare bones structure. All you've got really plot wise is the idea that there's this twist where we discover that he's lost his wife before the movie ever started, and that he's homeless and he's wandering, and that gives the ultimate kind of payoff to Neil's arc of having to be charitable and opening up his heart in the spirit of the season. And so that gives him the reason to bring this guy home for Thanksgiving. And it gives a reason for John Candy and Steve Martin to be together on screen at the end of the film. which is really important.
Completely.
But everything else is like these two guys get thrown together. They have an odd couple dynamic. And the actual nuts and bolts of how the plot works could be just exchanged with any other set of nuts and bolts. You know, yes. There could be other delays and other reasons, other modes of transport, different mishaps along the way. And so from a plot point of view, all of that is pretty much interchangeable. And that's not a weakness at all. That's a strength, especially for a comedy, because a comedy, you need to be able to try different things, see what works and put it all together in the edit. And I mean, nowadays that's done to a real, to a kind of an extreme in the kind of a, I'm always just saying, using Judd Apatow's name as a shorthand. Obviously there's lots of other directors, lots of other people, but in that kind of that school of the collective, these people who all appear in each other's movies and there's a set of directors and all of this that cross over, in that kind of Apatow school, they've gone, I think, too far, which is they rely too heavily on improv, not enough ideas going into it. Because while I say that this movie is fairly threadbare in terms of plot, it's full of ideas that had to be written beforehand. These were not, you don't improvise a car going on fire and, you know, all of these special effects shots that were needed and all of the kind of, you know, mishaps that come in. And there's like, there were loads of comedically solid ideas on the page before they shot anything. And I think that is maybe lacking in today's, in the world of comedy movies. And that's why in general, as I was saying to you on our episode of Malkovich, that like, the films I laugh at most are kind of comedy dramas or straight up dramas that just have some humorous moments in them, because I don't really find comedies that funny most of the time. Some great exceptions, and the Apatow ones have some great exceptions, but that's my take on all that.
Okay, no, I definitely agree with you on that. Now I love when Del says love is not a big enough word, he points to in the direction of the picture of Marie.
Nice touch.
Yeah, it's a nice touch. And then the two of them decide to give a little toast, and they both say to the wives, and then they drink up.
Yeah.
And at this point, Del drinks the entire bottle. So yesterday we were talking about what he's drinking. He's drinking rum. Mm-hmm. You know, that's what he wants. And then he gives a big wow right afterwards, which obviously reminds me of what movie?
Wow.
The Greatest Game.
Oh, okay. Sorry. Yeah.
The Greatest Game. You know, you have the theme where you have Hiltz, Henley, and Goff. They're making they're in their distillery, and the three of them all give off their big wows after taking a little drink.
It's got a kick.
So that this wow really, really, surprised me here, and it's great.
Great.
You know, and then we see Neil. He takes like one of the bags of Doritos and just throws it on the floor, which is not something I would have expected from
Neil is getting much more loosey-goosey. And
he's drunk, so what do you expect?
And he's decided to make the best of this situation and to stop being, you know, he decided to get that stick out of his butt. And
completely. And then basically Neil then says, well, let me just close this conversation by saying you are one unique individual. And then Del responds, what's unique? Is that Latin for So, I mean, Del slightly, you know, slurs his words.
Yeah.
And as Neil is saying this, he actually turns off the light in the process of this whole thing.
Yeah.
You know, and Neil then doesn't even respond to what Del said. Now, when you hear the word asshole, what do you think? Where do you think that word came from? What is the history of the term?
Right. Well, I'm sure I don't know. I mean, it's one of those that's so kind of, it has an obvious origin to do with our bodily features. So I just think, you know, comparing somebody to an anus is pretty, it's pretty straightforward, and I would imagine that it arose independently in several languages. I could be wrong. You know, it just seems like an obvious insult. you know.
Yeah, exactly. Okay, well, it was in English. It was first used in 1500, where it's found in different sources where they use the term arsehole.
You're right.
Okay,
yeah.
And the metaphorical use of the word, where sometimes you might refer to it as the worst place in the world or something like that. That's actually found in literature in 1865.
Wow. That's amazing.
And the first time that it's being used to describe a contemptible person is in a book in 1933.
So it's used as a bad, you know, a crappy place before it's used for people.
That is
so funny. I would have completely thought it was the opposite.
Me too. I completely agree with you.
That you talking about Ace as like the hole of nowhere seems like such a more modern thing than calling somebody asshole. Yeah, yeah.
Yeah. Wow. So, I mean, it's obviously been used quite often since then. You know, in the 70s, Hustler magazine would actually have a feature which they called Asshole of the Month.
Oh, right, yeah.
In 1972... there's a song by Jonathan Richmond. The song is called Pablo Picasso, which includes a line that says Pablo Picasso
never got called an asshole. Yeah. I know it well.
Yes. It was considered up until the 90s one of the words that you could not say on commercial television in the US.
Yeah.
And comedian Andrew Dice Clay caused a major shock when he used the word in a live televised MTV show award in 1989.
Wow, scandalous. So yes. What's your level? Will you be beeping or honking out the word asshole in this
episode? Yes, I will. Yes, right. I will. Everyone will be trying to figure out what we're saying when we keep saying the word asshole.
Something whole. Yeah.
Yeah, basically. But by 1994, it became much more acceptable. And the TV show NYPD Blue would use it quite often, right? Yeah. And then in syndication airings of South Park, they would use it with only partially bleeping it out. that's just a little fun thing to check out as to.
Because South Park did a whole thing about that. They had, because after. The next was the S word for poo was the next kind of
you can say shit, it'll be beeped.
but I'm just giving you less to beep, so
no, that's fine. No need to edit yourself. I'll edit you for
okay. But when South Park did a whole episode about that, they had a counter in the corner for how many times they said it, but they also had this thing of like that the first time it's going to be said on this show tonight, and it was, they either just said it was called NYPD Blue or it was an obvious stand-in for NYPD Blue. It was like, I think they might have changed the name for it.
Well, I know in one of the episodes of ER, when one of the main characters died, they got permission to use the word when he was dying. That was his last word.
Wow. Yeah. Because I find, and kind of the reason that I'm sidestepping using the word is because I know you will censor them, and I have to admit, no offense, it's your podcast, you edit it the way you like. I do find it kind of irritating listening to beeps listening to censored language. I mean, on a podcast a few of them come up and you know what they're saying anyway. It's not a big deal, but like I stopped watching Key and Peele because I couldn't, I had watched several seasons and there was season 4, whatever it was. I couldn't find a version without beeps. I just didn't watch it. I cannot sit through that. And it's like, when it's a podcast, it's a bit more conversational. It's okay. But when it's just something that's like finished and edited and scripted, and they are the words that these people chose and they're, you know, acting instead of just having a conversation, it's like, it kills me. I just can't watch it. It's the same. Nowadays, I watch South Park. If I watch South Park, it'll be completely uncensored, and I can't go back.
Right. Okay. No, that's fair. I completely agree with you. Again, I edit things and beep things out because I want to keep things open for a larger audience. Where if kids want to listen to this at some point, I don't want to be the one corrupting them.
Yeah.
Obviously,
You don't want to
obviously
be,
they're going to
yeah.
hear a beep.
They'll pick it up
No, but they're going to
somewhere,
hear it.
but not
The
from
truth
you.
is they're going to hear a beep and they're going to go try and figure out what it is that was said anyway. So it doesn't
Yeah,
matter.
yeah.
But I don't know. I like to keep it family friendly. So I think that's what it comes down to.
Oh no, totally. But on the other side, when it's like when you were saying on ER, they asked for permission to use certain words, whatever,
Well, they had to
that
ask for
like,
permission because they pay a fine. I mean, we just as of recording, the Academy Awards was a little more than a week ago, and ABC definitely got fined for that.
Of course, because
Because of what both.
keep my wife's name out
That's
your
right,
effing mouth.
exactly, and also Chris Rock, swearing also.
Oh, Chris Rock did. Oh, was he?
No, because
Okay, yeah.
he said he.
Oh, yes. When he got once he got
Right,
hit.
exactly.
Yeah, amazing.
So whatever, just the way it is. No
No,
one's
but
gonna find me
it's.
for it, so I'm good.
Oh, of course. But there's the other thing of like self-censorship. When I remember I was watching Breaking Bad, and I love Breaking Bad, but there was a point in it when Jesse ends up in hospital. I forget what even happened to him, and he has just had it with Walter, and Walter is coming in trying to make it right and saying, yeah, Jesse, we'll get back and we'll get back at them and we'll make up for him, blah blah blah. And like Walter is not getting the message from Jesse that it's like, no, it's over. I'm done with you. I'm not dealing with you anymore. This was meant to be, a way to make money, and it's, you've gone way too far with it. And he's so sick of him. He just turns and, great acting, these two great actors in these roles, and he just says, "Screw you, Mr. White," and it just curls my toes. It's like there is no way he would not say "fuck you" in that moment. What possible reason in that moment, where he's at the end of his tether, would he have to self-censor? And it just like that's one where I would have preferred a beep,
Okay, I
because like
understand.
"screw you" is so like it's such a it reminds me of all the movies that you watch growing up, like or on an airplane, you watch the censored version of a movie, or on network TV, and of course here in Ireland, when we get the UK TV stations, they would just dub it themselves with like suddenly English actors are
Oh,
in over saying "screw
wow.
you" or something like that, "forget you," and it's always these terrible phrases that aren't phrases, the classic from RoboCop is "this guy's one bad mother crusher,"
There you
which is a
go.
favorite of mine.
That's great. Right. So, I mean, basically, I like the scene. I like the way that it's set up. I like the fact that we're getting to see the two of them bonding because, we have less than 20 minutes left of this movie, and it gives them the opportunity to be much more bonded over this final part of the film. So that's really good. So the discrepancies in the script are there are some here because they have an extended conversation between the two of them that actually goes on for 3.5 pages. Wow. Yeah, it's a lot. But I'll try to go through it quickly. So their conversation goes like this. Dell says, "You know how few people give a sh about curtain rings? Who cares about lipstick ads? At least you deal with pretty girls. You know what shower rings are? You know what lipstick is? When I'm dead and buried, all I'll count for is a couple million shower curtains that haven't fallen down. That's some legacy, huh? My life's work is thrown away, burned and recycled. Yours will last longer than mine." And then Dell goes, "What do you pull down a year?" And then Neil responds, "I do okay. You know what I claimed as income last year?" Neil goes, "That means nothing. Any second string player in the NFL makes more in a week than Van Gogh made in his lifetime." Dell goes, "Van Gogh textiles up in Buffalo?" He goes, "No, the painter." Oh. Then Neil goes, "Money's no measurement of worth. True worth to the human race. I have a lot of it and don't feel like I'm worth any more than when I was broke. In fact, I probably felt better about myself when I was broke." So that's interesting about Neil that he says that. And then Dell goes, "I bang all around this country doing less and less each year. I talk a blue streak, but when it comes right down to it, I'm running on fumes. That briefcase I said I got at a sales award, that was 12 years ago. So I've lost half my accounts to a computer catalog. Every year, half a dozen customers retire, and the business goes with them. You ever read Death of a Salesman? Sure. Sometimes I find myself practically quoting Willie Loman, unconsciously quoting him. He was an older guy. You're young. So what? Youth makes diddly means diddly if you don't have anything to look to but growing old. At the very least, at the absolute minimum, you have a woman you love to grow old with. Dell doesn't reply. You love her, don't you? Your wife? Dell goes, love isn't a big enough word, buddy. So there you go. Start with that. You know how guys in this world have money and nobody to spend it on? Dell's silent again. Hey, I'm sorry I popped you in the gut. I deserved it. No, you didn't. Sure I did. If I didn't have one foot in my mouth and the other in a bucket of shit, I wouldn't recognize myself. Well, let me just close the conversation by saying you're one unique individual. Unique. That's Latin for animal. And that's pretty much how that whole scene goes. So it's not needed. They cut it really well.
Yeah.
I think that, you know, they do a great job.
Yeah. And do you think it was shot?
Yeah, I'm sure it was.
Yeah.
From what I understand, it was all shot.
Yeah, it's very wordy, and I think it would feel out of place in this movie with, like, talking about Willie Loman and, you know, that, like, but it's interesting. It does play into themes.
And the Picasso joke, the
Van Gogh.
The Van Gogh joke. Yeah. Just was, too much.
Yeah, or Van Gogh. And, it's interesting that you're saying about worth and money and, you know, your contribution to humanity and stuff, because that's like that comes up time and again in John Hughes movies, because, like,
yes,
John Hughes, I think, was born into money, very comfortable, at least, and because all of the, like, the world of a John Hughes movie is suburban houses that are just massive, and of course we see at the end of this movie a very John Hughes looking movie, not a million miles away from the McAllister residence, and he's kind of obsessed with money and privilege, and yet in some of his movies seems kind of blind to it and just gives people these massive houses and just, it's like, yeah, they just have infinite money, you know? And it's, it just speaks to me of somebody, I don't know much about John Hughes' background, but it speaks to me of somebody who is born into money and hence can't see their privilege a lot of the time, but wants to, and wants to kind of, recognize that there's a hell of a lot of people who have it much worse off than they do.
Right. That's true. All right, very good. So every day we have a segment called Off the Beaten Track, where either myself or my guest will give a little story about something that happened to us along the journey of life, some adventure or misadventure, something like that. So today we have another story from me. So once I remember I was visiting my parents back in Detroit. It was, I must have been probably around 22, 23, something like that. And I borrowed the, we always had a spare car. So I borrowed the spare car, and I went out with friends, and I drove into, you know, to meet friends in an area which I usually don't go to. And, you know, we finished the movie. On my way home, the car started sputtering probably closer to 8 Mile, you know, back what I mentioned before about an area that is not necessarily the most friendly area. And it ended up, the car stopped right in front of a gas station. And I didn't know what was wrong with the car. I still, to this day, am not a car person. I don't really, you know, I know how to change a tire. I know to, you know, check the oil. I know to, you know, do the little things, but I can't really do big things on it. And I was just sitting there. I said, I'll wait a few minutes, see if maybe I just flooded the engine. You know, and obviously this was because it was a spare car, you know, the fuel gauge didn't work properly anyway. So I wasn't sure specifically how much was left there. You know, was it that the car ran out of gas, whatever it was. And I was sitting there for a few minutes, and then a police car drove up, and, you know, the policeman asked me, what's going on? What's the story? And I said, well, the car just stopped here. And he says, well, this isn't the place you really want to be stopped in. Here, let's get out. We'll put the car in neutral, and we'll pull into the gas station, and then you can try and figure out how to fill up. So we did that. I put gas in the car, Nothing happened. So I was like, all right, I'm gonna have to call AAA. But I said, all right, I'll wait a few more minutes. I waited like 10 minutes and the car started and that was it. And I was able to get home and I didn't mention it to my parents. I didn't tell them where I was. I didn't say that the car almost got, you know, that because, you know, the policeman told me I couldn't, that if I need to, I can't leave the car there. You know, he'll come back a few hours later just to make sure that the car is not there and that I took care of it or something like that. And this is obviously days before cell phones and stuff like that. So yeah, that's my little story.
Good stuff. So did you, was it you just had run out of gas?
From what I understand, I think the thing is, I think that I flooded it because I didn't need to fill up the tank completely. I think that's what
okay. So what I was thinking then is like, if you didn't mention anything to your parents, and I mean, that could have been an interesting follow up of like, oh, there's something wrong with the car. If only we had, we got your parents get stranded out in the highway somewhere. If only we had known there was something wrong with the car, we could have got it checked. And you're like, glee.
Something similar did happen to me with that. And one of these days I'll get around to telling that story too.
Bring that one up. Okay, cool.
All right, great. So do you want to tell people once again how they can get in touch with you?
Please visit malkovichminute.net. You'll find all of the necessary links there.
All right, and to find me is very simple. You can just do a quick search for A Movie on Minute, and you can find me on Facebook, on Twitter, or go to my website. And once again, today you can listen to episode 74 of the Silverado Minute, where me and my good friend Todd Liebenau from Forgotten Filmcast talk about minute 74 of the Silverado Minute. The great Lawrence Kasdan movie from 1985, great Western. You know, the whole thing is a group minute-by-minute project that was arranged and produced by Jim O'Kane. So thanks a lot, Jim, and go check that out. And until tomorrow, you're fucked.
You're fucked.